Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Remember, he who closes his ear to the cry of the poor, he himself also shall cry and not be heard.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Pastor Doug Riggs. And we're going to be talking about what really is going on behind the scenes. Now, most people look at what's going on today about the battle between the Republican presidential nominee and the Democrat presidential nominee. And we're looking and seeing what's going on over in the Near East and the Middle East, the threats of war, what's going on financially, the very real possibility that we're going to see a major financial collapse. And we're looking at all the material and objective things going on. But of course, you really can't understand what is taking place unless you understand that there is a supernatural dimension to everything. There is another dimension out there, certainly if you believe in the Bible, why you see all sorts of supernatural things are happening. Certainly, Jesus bringing someone back from the dead, walking on water, commanding the storm to cease and it ceases, healing lepers. I mean, is the Bible simply telling stories, or is this real? And if you believe the Bible, you have to believe there's a supernatural element. And that supernatural element is playing a very large factor, a very large part of explaining what is going on today. With that as a background, Pastor Doug Riggs, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me back on your program.
Well, you go ahead and pick up the story. Tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Well, as a pastor, I've been, of course, working with those that are trauma-based mind control victims of satanic ritual abuse since the mid-80s. And it's been a growing and progressive experience for me in really learning on, you know, what this is about. It's not just about demonization. It's about the fragmentation and the splitting of the person's identity through purposeful trauma, and of course this results in the person's identity being fragmented, and of course you can program different parts of a person's identity, and a whole internal world is developed through specific kinds of protocols that were developed by Dr. Josef Mengele. And so through the years we have learned the process of what's going on with these people, and it's a long, arduous journey for people to come out of, from this background, especially those that have been groomed to bring in the Antichrist, to bring in the New World Order. And the one of the most amazing things that we've had to deal with is to see the way people have been specifically structured and programmed to infiltrate the church so that the church becomes compromised, it becomes weakened in terms of its spiritual impact, because people that are programmed and, of course, loaded up with spirit, they create an atmosphere that weakens the testimony of Jesus and the effectiveness of the church. church.
Well, you know, Doug, I think the hardest thing is for the average Christian, the average churchgoer to believe that there really are people out there who, are, of course, have been programmed, first of all, to believe in this idea of a one-world government. They tie into secret societies. They have dissociated personalities. But even more than that, that they actually have been assigned to infiltrate the church to undermine the Christian message, and that the battle really is, of course, an effort to destroy Christianity. That's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. They knew what they were doing. That's why they've changed the music and the message of our churches. That's why we certainly have people in key positions in the Protestant religion, like Ted Haggard, a cocaine-using homosexual who used his power heading the National Association of Evangelicals to undermine Christianity, as we have similar people in the Catholic Church doing exactly the same. And we'll be back in just a moment with Doug Riggs. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening, Pastor Doug Riggs, just back from South Africa, giving seminars over there, and trying to acquaint the religious leaders over there with this truly spiritual battle that's taking place. And, of course, I was telling Pastor Doug that when I was lived in South Africa in the mid-1970s, that there was, I became very much aware that most of the black population really did believe in demons. The maids over there all believed in demons. Certainly the people all went to the witch doctor before they went to the white doctor, because I was the white doctor. But he certainly came to realize, of course, that in South Africa, why the occult plays a very important part of the in the life over there. Tragically, this is one of the reasons why South Africa is really having the problems they are today. The whole structure of society is beginning to break down, increasing lawlessness over there. And until they can get back to the Christian Foundation, which was once the foundation of that nation, I think they're just going to have more and more problems. Well, Pastor Doug was simply talking about here in the United States, where most of our ministers do not want to talk about this spiritual battle. They either don't know about it, they're afraid of it, but suddenly are ministers here becoming more aware, or at least some of them becoming more aware of the fact that behind everything going on politically and culturally and ideologically, Are this supernatural battle, that there really is another dimension, that there really are demonic spirits alive and well in our society today?
You know, years ago I used to travel to different churches that were seeking help. So there were some of the churches that were embracing the challenge to help people that are obviously manifesting dissociative identity disorder. They began to see that, you know, they had people in their congregations that needed help, but they didn't know what to do. So I would travel to go work with people and help train. A lot of them, they weren't the pastors, but they were people on the counseling staff. And so there are churches that do embrace this, but I think it's still a minority, Stan, unfortunately.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 464-8295. You have a question for Pastor Doug Riggs, who actually spends a good deal of his time, certainly when he's not being a minister, and actually counseling people with these dissociative disorders, which are brought about by actual intentionally traumatizing children to give them simply these multiple personalities. So basically, Doug, do some of these people talk to you about certainly this whole idea of the world government? Do any of them ever discuss these concepts of the Illuminati or the fact that their families really are part and parcel of this world conspiratorial movement?
Yes, most of the people I've worked with come from European descent. Their families are part of the European royalty. They have been taken all over the world to be involved with high-level rituals. They all talk about deep underground military-type bases where there is a vast army being assembled that will eventually assemble on the fields of, you know, of Armageddon to oppose Jesus Christ in his second return. In other words, if we go to Revelation 19:19 and we see when Jesus Christ returns, on that battlefield, there are assembled the kings of the earth and the enemies of God to wage war against the Lamb. Now, the question is, how did they get there? In other words, at some point in history, this army had to be prepared, and the significant part of this army in terms of the hierarchy of authority, these are already hybrids. All the people I've been working with for over 25 years say that the hybrid breeding program, just as it was in the days of Noah, has been going on for over 50 years, and when the time comes, and God is ultimately in charge of that, they are going to be released, and there is going to be a final war and conflict between the powers of darkness and Jesus Christ, as we see in Revelation 16, Revelation 17, Revelation 19. There is a coming war that will trump all other wars in history.
Well, could you explain what you mean by hybrids for our listeners? I don't think that they understand that term. Would you mind explaining how this fits into the spiritual battle?
Yeah, if you go back to Genesis 3:15, we see in the proto-evangel there that with the disobedience of Adam and the subsequent fall, that there would be enmity between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. So the seed of the woman, as we know from Galatians 3:16, is ultimately pointing to Christ, but Satan also has a seed. Now, if we go to Genesis 6:1-4, we see the first incursion of where the Bnei HaElohim, the watchers, those particular angels there, cohabited with women, and as a result, as we see in Genesis 6:4, there is a hybrid offspring. In other words, the union of a fallen angel with a woman produces a hybrid entity. They were referred to as Nephilim.
And, of course, you use the term watchers. And, because does this refer to a fallen angel?
Well, yeah, that comes from the book of Enoch. Those angels, the sons of God, were referred to as watchers. Those angelic beings are also used, I think, in the book of Daniel. Daniel is at chapter 4, chapter 5. The watchers are used there as well as referring to, in that case, I believe, elect angels. But these are fallen angels, and we know from 2 Peter 2, 4, these particular angels involved in Genesis 6 were imprisoned for their rebellion, held there for a judgment. And, of course, another reference we see in Jude 6 and 7, that these particular class of angels involved in this incursion, they left their assigned sphere of rule, and they abandoned their habitation, that is, their form of creation to take on physicality in order to produce offspring. Now, the point is, why did they do this? It was to corrupt the human gene pool so that the Messiah couldn't come. We know from Genesis chapter 6, verse 9, that Noah was perfect in his generation. The word perfect doesn't mean sinless. It means that his DNA was not corrupted as a result of the incursion that occurred in Genesis 6. Now, of course, Jesus referred to the days of Noah when he said, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall be at the return of the Son of Man. So when we look back at the days of Noah, there was violence, and there was this attempt of the adversary to corrupt the seed of the woman so the Messiah couldn't come and be our Redeemer.
And I think if people have to really analyze, of course, what it says there in Matthew 24 when Jesus was asked, you know, how will we know when you're going to return? And as it was in the days of Noah, and because the world was just plain evil in those days, and these demonic spirits permeated every aspect of society. The Nephilim were hearing at that time. They were the offspring. They were the offspring, certainly, of these demonic angels and women. And certainly, I suspect that the same thing is going on today. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is the reports I have been receiving and hearing for the last 25 years. Women from different walks of life that haven't met each other, they report that at the age of 13, they have been prepped. They've been generationally selected. They've been prepped throughout their life. So at age 13, there is a conception event where they are brought into union with a fallen angel. And produce these offspring. The difference is that the quintessential hybrid today is not a giant. These may be a part of the mix, but the goal is to create a hybrid that looks just like us, only is super enhanced in every way, intelligent, physically. They're referred to as the champions or the beautiful people. I've heard this for a number of years. So this particular species that is reportedly hidden away, waiting for a disclosure event. They're going to come forth as under the ruse of aliens, but they are the quintessential man. They are that species that's to replace who we are, and according to the evolutionary lie and deception, man can now evolve to that higher level of humanity, which will be representative in this new hybrid species.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. But Pastor Doug Riggs has been working for, you know, a quarter of a century with these people, and so many of them have similar stories. Can some of these people who have been raised in these satanic families and these occult certainly situations, can some of them certainly get rid of that and come into a personal relationship with our Lord?
Yes, in fact, everyone that I have worked with were already Christian. And I think, you know, if we understand the adversary, he cannot stop a person from being born again. But if he can capture that event, a new birth event, at the earliest possible level, then that part of the person's identity, that new birth identity, that can be sequestered to severe trauma and dissociation and just wrapped in spiritual death, then the person that is created off of that is fragmented and programmed so that the everyday presenting person will be completely amnesic to what has happened to them in that original new birth event. And so the goal, for me, is to release that new birth identity that's been targeted and taken captive so they can ultimately be, as James chapter 1, verse 4 says, whole, complete, and lacking in nothing. It's a long, challenging road, but I see God doing that, Dr. Stan.
All right. Fine. Well, certainly we've got a couple of people on the line. We'll try to get to them. But I think it's important that people understand that we really are involved in a spiritual battle. And certainly we're talking about all sorts of things, contemporary things that are taking place. We see the rise of crime, really more crime than we've ever had before. The latest figures suggest that crime in the United States is up 18% this past year. Now, it hasn't been going up for some time, and yet suddenly we see very close to, 18%, almost 20% dramatic increase in violent crime in the United States this past year. What's going on? Well, I think, of course, we're seeing the end of society as we've known it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Pastor Doug Riggs, who actually works with many of these people with multiple personalities, dissociative personalities, and of course, they will tell him what's really going on in the occult world because they're from occult families. And of course, Damien had called in from Santa Cruz and suddenly questioning, you know, well, how could we have these Nephilim today? And how, suddenly we had Nephilim before the flood, that there were these fallen angels had relationships with women, and the offspring was Nephilim. And after the flood, why, there's still fallen angels out there, and there's still women, and unfortunately, the same thing is going on today. Yes, Damien, these beings can actually materialize, and this is what people don't understand. There is a supernatural element out there. There is another dimension, and that is where these angels exist, but they can cross over into our dimension. Anything else you wanted to ask, Damien?
Just add a comment too, is that popular culture today actually promotes this, and there's a popular song on the radio by a pop musician by the name of Katy Perry, and her song is called Supernatural, and she actually sings about this.
And basically,
it's being promoted and played to, you know, people of today.
You're absolutely right. Pastor Doug, how would you respond to what Damien's saying? He's saying that, you know, they have these songs, you know, on the radio and on television that promote this sort of thing.
Yes. In fact, that particular song, I've seen it, where she, the whole thing is having sexual relationships with one of these entities, and in the end, you see a hybrid. She's walking with a hybrid. And so, yeah, the culture is being prepped and prepared for what's called the disclosure event. You who are listening, if you just type in disclosure, Dr. Greer, there are many people out there that are looking forward to these advanced species, who do they refer to as aliens? They're not aliens. They're bred and born right here. But the whole deception is that they're going to come as our saviors and lead us to the next evolutionary development and phase of mankind. It's all deception. But we're being prepared, and of course the media, and specifically music, and the example here, Katy Perry, they're promoting this whole thing that is something we should embrace and accept.
Damien, have anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
Well, I think that, like, it's pretty scary that is happening, and young people are listening to this, and it's like a catchy song, and I found myself, you know, and then I'm like, wait, what is this? This is crazy what these people are singing about, you know, I mean, and you can see it on TV, like Pastor was saying, is that,
but the whole thing is a lie. What they want you to believe, of course, is that there are UFOs out there, and they're coming from another planet, another galaxy, something of the sort. And supposedly there's these aliens coming in from these other other galaxies. This is not true. I believe there are UFOs, but I believe that they're manifestations of this other dimension. I believe that there are beings on these. But these beings can materialize and dematerialize because they are from the other dimension. They do not want people to understand the spiritual battle that's going on, Damien. They want people to honestly believe that there are aliens from other planets. UFOs are real, but they're not certainly from other planets. God bless. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, fine. Well, Pastor Doug, would you agree or disagree with that? Because you don't have to agree with me. I'd like to know what you think.
No. I agree. The whole, you know, when it comes to the UFOs, there in the work that I've been working with survivors, there are two categories. There are those UFOs that are just appear as light orbs. These are most likely manifestations of fallen angels or demons, and they are a part of the mix. But there are also those crafts that are actually physical. And they, those that are in these craft are, I believe, from what has been reported, are hybrids. In fact, all a person has to do is go into Amazon under books and just type in man-made UFOs. And you'll be surprised at how many researchers have actually documented some of the deep underground military black ops that since World War II, these craft have evolved in their development, and they're a part of the underground military, or the black shadow government military, however you want to refer to it.
But the thing is, of course, people don't dare talk about this. It would cost them their lives. When you begin to getting into this, of course, basically they will do everything they can to conceal it. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And a lot of people will say, this, I can believe a lot of things. I couldn't believe this. Well, if you believe the Bible, ladies and gentlemen, there is a supernatural element. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Pastor Doug Riggs we're certainly talking about. We're talking about the metaphysical. We're talking about the other dimension. And, of course, we're talking about the fact that some people who are not Christians, but who have actually studied this sort of thing and talked to these women who tell how they've been accosted in Sydney, they've taken their, these beings have taken their ova and Sydney have violated them sexually. And these people trying to understand this from a logical point of view have come to the same conclusion that Christians have, and that is that this is a metaphysical manifestation. that there really are spiritual forces out there. And it's amazing how many people, not Christian, who objectively looked at it and realized, of course, that there are not beings from other galaxies. The UFOs are not from other planets. They're from the other dimension. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Pastor Doug Riggs. And Pastor Doug, will you tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get your information and the material that you put out based upon your years of experience?
Sure. It's Doug Riggs, R-I-G-G-S, .org. And when people go to the website, if they go to the Bite Show, I've done a series of interviews with what is called Nephilim Mother interviews. And, of course, I've interviewed Dr. Preston Bailey. I've interviewed other folks on there on this subject. Also, if they go to under the tab SRADID, which is Satanic Ritual Abuse, Dissociative Identity Disorder, but SRADID, if they go to that page, I have a whole series, a listing of subjects that address this particular phenomenon.
And I would simply comment that we actually carry the material put out by L.A. Marzulli. We have his Watchers DVDs 1, 2, 3, and 4. And we actually have a couple of books that he's written, which we think are one of them is called Alien Encounters. And the information is fascinating. We have Doug Woodward's the books. I think it's Prophecy 1 and Prophecy 1 and Prophecy 2?
No, Power Quest.
Power Quest 1 and Power Quest 2. We carry these. We carry this information because we want you to have the opportunity to get the information. We have certainly a 4-CD set on the supernatural. We just interviewed Pastor Bailey last night, and we have a fair amount of material on this. We have a 4 tape set on, certainly on UFOs. You must understand these are not imaginary, they're real, but they're manifestations of the other dimension. Well, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Lauren, who's calling from the state of Washington. Lauren, what part of Washington do you live in?
I live in the southeastern part.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment for us?
I do. I'm interested in this multiple personality thing. How did they figure out that this was going on? Are these people just repressing these memories? Because I've heard of things like this. I've heard of people saying that they're having relations with a supernatural being, but and I felt like it was a demonic thing, but I just wanted a little bit more information about how this all kind of came together.
Well, yes, there's several different things that are your issues here. First of all, multiple personality disorder, which has now been classified and designated as dissociative identity disorder, is a result of chronic trauma in early childhood. So the child, when they're overwhelmed with terror and pain, their identity fragments. This is listed this is a diagnostic statistical manual for mental disorders. It's one of the accepted diagnoses. So that in and of itself is a separate phenomenon. Now what the cult does, when I say cult, are those that are committed to bringing in the Antichrist, they will use trauma, they will employ trauma to cause a person to split. And then when the part of the identity splits, then they channel in spirits to be attached to the fragmentation of the person's soul and identity. And then the person is actually structured through the fragmentation by the powers of darkness to create a whole inner world. Now, that phenomenon is in and of itself. Now, many of these people have been selected, the women, to become breeders. They're also multiple, that is, they have been fragmented, but then they have been selected to be breeders to create an end-time army and to create a hybrid species. So I don't know if that addressed all your questions or not, but this is this particular phenomenon is well known by many, many counselors. And, you know, any chronic trauma in early childhood, it doesn't have to be satanic ritual abuse. It could be incest or any kind of trauma, like the Three Faces of Eve or the movie Sybil. There was no indication that it was satanic in terms of ritual, But that abuse did cause the fragmentation of the identity. So that person needs to have a lot of therapy, healing, counseling for their identity to come back together into wholeness.
And basically, it's not imaginary, Lauren. It's very real, and we've even met a few
people like this.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe that it is real. These women go later on, have children. They are breeders. They are used for that, and they know that they're going to be used for this.
It's not that they know it right away, because they're groomed and prepared from earliest childhood. So one of the chief characteristic features of chronic trauma in early childhood is amnesia. So what happens when the person gets older and the amnesia begins to break down, then they begin to get in touch with how they've been used to be breeders. They don't know it as long as amnesia is there, and until that begins to break down, then they begin to see how they've been programmed and how they've been selected as a part of the Satan's end time agenda to bring in this massive army that ultimately is going to be directed against God on the battlefield of Armageddon at Revelation 19:19.
You know, one of the most interesting things, Lauren, I've been at this for about 20 years, as you know, at least as far as studying this sort of thing. At about the time we first got started doing our radio programs, about 1992, 20 years ago, why, of course, we would get some of the people coming and telling about their experiences and how they'd been utilized and these demonic experiences they'd had. And then suddenly there came out something called the false memory syndrome. And that was basically saying, look, this is all made up. This doesn't exist at all. These are all false memories are being implanted by psychologists, and they're being implanted by people who are trying to help these people, but they're giving them these ideas. It's all a false memory. And they had organizations all across the country affiliated with the Central Organization on False Memories. And who was funding it? Why, the CIA. And who were the leaders of it? Why, CIA psychiatrists. Why in heaven's name would people, CIA psychologists and psychiatrists like Jolly West, you know, he was a CIA psychiatrist. He was the fellow who was down there visiting Tim McVeigh all the time. He was in prison before he supposedly was executed. And basically there were a number of these key CIA people putting forward this idea, it's all false memories. Did you ever run into that, Pastor Doug?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the CIA program, or the MK Ultra and Bluebird, some of these programming, most of the people I've worked with have been subjected to that. But the deeper level programming goes way much deeper into the European, to cover up the European royal families. But many of these people have been used to be structured as MK Ultra candidates to carry out various, to be operatives in terms of government function and to be used as sex slaves and those kinds of things in the government. But yeah, this is well documented by a number of writers. I know Dr. Colin Roth has written books on this. He rewrote his book. I think it's called The CIA Doctors. But yeah, this phenomenon is well known by those that are working in this field.
In fact, we carry that with CIA doctors. Go ahead, Lauren.
I have another question. Right. Who is raising these children? That's my first question. And my next question is, how do we get more information about this so that we can be more educated on this?
Okay, fine. Well, now, who is raising the children, and then how can we get more information? So go ahead, Pastor Doug.
Well, the universal reports that I have received throughout the years that there are deep military underground bases. They call them military. They're not military as we know it. But these deep underground bases, they're very vast. They're very expensive. If you just Google in DUMB as an acronym, deep underground military bases, these are the kinds of facilities where these are being kept until the time of disclosure. Of course, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7 says the mystery, that is the secret of iniquity, is currently operational until the time of the revealing of the Antichrist. So all of this revealing, they're being kept until Antichrist is being revealed. Now, as far as information, I've dedicated as much as I can on my website to help to you know, educate people to understand this. As I mentioned earlier, on my website, DougRiggs.org, under the Bite Show, I've done interviews on this. What's called the Nephilim Mothers, and other interviews on this phenomenon on transhumanism. And then under the SRADID, I have a whole series of articles there that describe dissociative identity disorder. There's various kinds of resources there, including a whole history of Dr. Mengele and his role. So I've tried to do the, you know, to at least help address some of this.
And basically, of course, I think that most of the people are experts on this. We have on our program from time to time. In fact, we're having L.A. Marzulli is going to be with us on the weekend. He's done a lot of work on this. Tom Horn, who we carry many of his books here. I certainly am. Then, of course, Woodward, Doug Woodward we have. And anyway, we've done a number of interviews with him, carry his book. So you need to get this information. Certainly go to our website. You'll find references to it. And Sydney L.A. Marzulli has an excellent website. Tom Horn has an excellent website. The information is there, and we can help you get it. We want people to understand what this is about. It is so incredible. People say it just couldn't be true. Sounds like something, you know, it just came out of a movie. It does. But the trouble is, it's a true movie. Anything else you wanted to ask, Lauren, before we let you go?
No, I just appreciate you educating us on this. I really appreciate it. I happen to be studying it in my Bible study right now. And I'm amazed. I'm just amazed.
Well,
it
is amazing. God bless, and thanks very much. Okay, our telephone. Bye bye. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call here, and let's go to Michael calling from Michigan. Michael, does he have a question for our guest?
Yeah, this is fascinating. I got a sort of a comment. Me and my son one day, we were going up this hill, and you ain't gonna believe this. This sounds crazy. We went up this hill, and on the other side of the hill, there was like these 15 birds up there, and they were like 5 foot tall. I never seen anything like it. Me and my son looked at each other. I was like, whoa, look at this. What is this? And they started communicating with us telepathically. They were talking to us, but they weren't saying anything, but they were talking to in your head. I looked at him, he looked at me, we turned around and ran back down the hill.
That's an amazing story, and thank you very much for sharing that with us. And Pastor Doug, you know, so much of this sounds so incredible. Now, basically, do you think that there's, you mentioned that a lot of ministers really don't want to get into this discussion of these supernatural elements. Is this because they're fearful? Or have actually these people, at least some of them, infiltrated the church to neutralize its effectiveness at this time?
Oh, absolutely. I think, what I've seen, any church that is a viable church that can represent salt and light in this world, that church will be targeted by the enemy. His most effective means of infiltration is through the complex trauma-based mind control victim, because these people don't even know they're a victim. And they can be brought in under assignment with various hidden personalities that are assigned to carry out, to bring down pastors, to infiltrate churches, go into the nursery, to abuse the children. So you don't know that. I mean, these people, you can't tell by looking at them. So it's a very effective way to infiltrate the church. Now, if pastors do recognize this, they just don't have the time to get involved, because it takes specialized training. You have to not only understand deliverance in its proper biblical framework, but you have to understand trauma, that not everything that manifests is a demon. If someone has got severe trauma, you've got to recognize the symptomatology and know how to work with this. This takes experience, it takes training, and most pastors just don't have the time.
And Chris, what I have experienced personally is that we were in a wonderful church with a wonderful minister, and one person was there, wanted to get rid of that minister, and he did. I mean, everybody else in the church loved the minister, and yet this person was able to manipulate things and really get rid of the minister. And I think that certainly, I think this is a pattern that's used over and over again to destroy ministers who try to talk about this sort of thing. Have you run into that?
Oh, absolutely. And working with people, they can be truly born again. They can, in their presenter world, they're just like anybody else. But behind that front person, there can be a whole structured carousel of different parts that are amnesia to each other, that are structured in such a way, and they're held together by principalities and powers, so that these people are actually a weapons platform. So certain separated personalities or dissociated personality states can be used to channel spirits, to channel curses, to release powers, to bring in all kinds of corruption, confusion, demoralization, discouragement. I mean, these people are weapons. They've been engineered to become spiritual weapons. And I've experienced this over and over again. And if you're not properly trained and experienced spiritually, this can really bring a person down very quickly. We have to know what it means to be, you know, dressed in the whole armor of God, be living in close fellowship with God, be living in community with one another, and know that the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but it can defeat these powers. But it's a real war, and if we're ignorant of the warfare, then we can become casualties.
I'm sure that's the case. Somebody had called in and said, how could angels have sex with women when angels are not supposed to have sex? Ladies and gentlemen, all you need to do is read the Bible. That's what it says. That's where the Nephilim came from. And anybody say that it couldn't happen, it's because they haven't read the scriptures. I mean, the fallen angels had sex with women. That's what it says in the Bible, and I believe it. Dr. Stan. We're out of time, but we do have Paul calling from the Northwest, and he said he was asking about the training of ministers who don't seem to want to address this. Now, what was your specific question, Paul? Certainly they were not educated in their seminaries in reference to this, because they've infiltrated, in my estimation, many of our seminaries have actually been infiltrated by people who were there to keep our ministers from understanding that. I'd like your thoughts on that, Pastor Doug.
Well, we just came back from a training seminar, doing two training seminars in South Africa, and on our website we have eight segments of that training seminar that we did in Pretoria. Unfortunately, we don't have the one in Cape Town, but that has been posted for those that would like to listen to that seminar. And it's all designed to train anyone who desires to have any kind of training. And I'm not the only one presenting. We have people that have come out of the project that are SRA DID. They travel with me, and they're sharing their testimonies, and they're part of the training program.
Okay, we're going to have to let you go, Paul. We're out of time. And Abel calling from Cincinnati, we're not going to be able to take the call, but I certainly appreciate you being with us tonight, Pastor Doug Riggs. And you go to his website, get his information, vitally important. God bless, and thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. And, of course, we do have certainly the DVDs on the Watchers 1, 2, 3, and 4. We have Power Quest, that says certainly Doug Woodward's, Woodward's a book, and then, of course, we have books by Tom Horn. Oh, we have certainly the material that Lynn Marzulli has put out, or L.A. Marzulli, and L.A. Marzulli is going to be one of our speakers this weekend. So, basically, we hope that you out there in the listening audience want to get this information. We have a four-tape set on the supernatural, and we have, of course, an interview we did last night with Pastor Bailey, and the information is all available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Of course, to put this all into perspective, I hope many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll want to hear my talks on The Dark Secret and on The Forbidden Secret. They're available on DVDs. And you want to get my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. Agenda 21 is the master plan for the 21st century. What these people who are running things from behind the scenes really plan to take place. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it's not very nice. They want to destroy the infrastructure of our society, impoverish our people, and destroy Christian civilization. This is their agenda. This is their goal. They're working very hard. They have fabulous wealth behind them, because many of these people are multi-billionaires who've been well rewarded by their subservience to the evil one who runs the world. This is Lucifer's world. This is not God's world. One day God will come and declare his leadership, but right now he's leaving it up to us. And I'd say that the people in America, people throughout the world, are doing a pretty poor job. The only thing that is going to save America is a massive revival. I don't see it coming, but I think we have to hope and pray that it will. We have to try to reach the Christians out there who really certainly love the Lord and certainly have given their lives to him. And what we need to do is explain to people what's really going on. And that's why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is a good place to start. My talks on The Dark Secret and The Forbidden Secret will give you some of the information you need, and then get the information from Tom Horn and Lynn Marzulli and Pastor Bailey, and from my guest this evening, Pastor Doug Riggs. It's all available, and you can find it on the Internet. If you can't, you can reach us. Remember, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. You can certainly go there and read our newsletters, listen to our programs 24 hours a day, live or archived. And then, of course, watch many of the DVDs we have. But please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection.
As we raise our voices,
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And well, for the next hour, the views of our good friend William Grigg, former senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now, of course, a prolific writer. You can get his articles. They're on his own website. They're very often up on Lou Rockwell. And, of course, William writes our monthly newsletter, does an excellent job for us. William, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing and a privilege to be with you, and I really appreciate everything that you've done for the cause of freedom and truth.
Well, what are we going to be talking about tonight?
It's gotten to the point, Dr. Stan, where we have to assume, and this is something that I say not by way of trying to frighten the audience into a sense of paralysis, but to give them a realistic understanding of our circumstances, that we have to assume that those of us who make ourselves conspicuous in speaking out against institutionalized corruption and speaking out in defense of liberty protected by law are going to be looked upon as enemies of the state. This is something that is the lot of people who are devoted to liberty in pretty much every epoch of human existence. But the biggest difference now, of course, is that we are seeing the consummate betrayal of what America was supposed to be, the ideal for which America was supposed to stand. Was that of individual liberty protected by law as recognized by the Anglo-Saxon tradition of the common law going back to Runnymede and before. That's one of the reasons, of course, why the Declaration of Independence was issued. That was a restatement of ancient principles. It wasn't a spontaneous revolution in human affairs. It wasn't something that represented the initial revelation of a truth that would be the defining aspirational summation of what would happen in the future. This was the distillate of what had been happening in the English culture for centuries. Before that, of course, they stood on the shoulders of the people read about the Bible. This is all something that was understood way back to the founding of the Hebrew nation and the Decalogue. In other words, we were talking about ancient principles of individual rights and liberty and truth. And every human society has been defined by those who seek to impose their will upon others, defiance of law and defiance of individual rights. We have a lot more to lose, however, and we're losing it. And because of the ubiquity of the government that rules us right now, and because of the sense of moral emancipation on the part of those who presume to rule us, we've reached the point now where everything we do is known to our would-be rulers, to those who presume to assert authority over us. And it's gotten to the point where every time we travel, as this recent experience of this prepper from Mississippi who is stranded in Hawaii right now because his name was on a no-fly list illustrates, every time we travel, we find ourselves being required to pass through security measures that in principle could be used to detain us, to arrest our progress, or to put us in the hands of people who don't recognize the limits on what they can do to us. It's something that we simply have to accept in terms of the risks that are involved in standing for freedom, but it's not something to which we have to submit. We have to fight it every time that we encounter that type of assertion of tyranny. And the point I'm making now is that this is the circumstance. It's no longer hypothetical. This is the circumstance in which we live right now.
But I think we have to point out, and the best way to do that is simply to point out, this whole war on terror is a $3 bill.
Yeah.
Basically, as we pointed out repeatedly, Israel recently released 1,027 convicted terrorists, 400 of them murderers or multiple murderers, to get back one soldier. Do you really think there's a war on terror when you release that many terrorists? William is simply talking about a phony terror attack. And there was a young man, a Bangladeshi, and certainly he is not without certainly guilt. He was willing to go along with this, how they talked him into going along with this plot to blow up the Federal Reserve System. Admittedly, they went along with it. They provided him with a vehicle supposedly containing a 1,000-pound bomb, and he was quite willing to set that off, but he was talked into this whole thing. There never would have been a threat to the Federal Reserve System if it hadn't certainly all been a setup. Now, does this excuse this man? Certainly not. I mean, he would have killed people. He honestly believed he was going to do it, but he was set up for this intentionally and purposely. And basically, if you look at all these so-called terrorist threats on the United States, I would say that about 98% of them have been simply staged by our own government to trap people into making absurd statements or even to being willing to go along with a plot to suddenly set off a bomb or do some other terrible, terrible thing. This is a recurrent pattern over and over and over again. Many times, of course, this has been suggested in their homelands as they've come here, but believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the entire world terrorist organizations are thoroughly infiltrated with American informants, just like the Communist Party was here in America. In fact, it was said at the end, certainly before the closing down of the Communist Party in America, probably at least 50% of the people attending Communist Party meetings were government informants. They didn't necessarily know the other people in the cell were government informants, but this is how it worked. This is how we fought communism. We financed it. It was financed by our great tax-exempt foundations and largely staffed by government employees. And the same thing is happening with the war on terror. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, there are only 50 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan today, only 50 members of Al-Qaeda, and we've got hundreds of thousands of people over there we're paying for, contractors. I think we've got our forces down to about 60,000 is what they tell us. But we've got the NATO troops there, we've got the Afghan soldiers, and they've got 50 members of Al-Qaeda. If you don't believe that, go to your search engine and type in Leon Panetta, Afghanistan, 50 members Al-Qaeda. Leon Panetta, Afghanistan, 50 members of Al-Qaeda. You'll find out what I'm telling you is true. So why do we have all those troops over there to fight 50 members of Al-Qaeda? Why don't we just simply send in one or two special forces team and take out the whole of the unit? Because we want to convince the American people that this threat of terrorism is real. Go right ahead, William.
Exactly. The entire Afghan war is devoted to two primary objectives, I'm convinced. The first of which is, I believe David Petraeus himself admitted in a moment of candor, has to do with seizing and controlling resources in Afghanistan. And of course, he was referring to the mineral wealth of that country, but also I think that it's by no means incidental to this discussion that you have a meteoric increase in opium production, heroin production coming out of Afghanistan, and the heroin production, the opium fields are being protected by American military personnel, including a young man from Idaho killed recently, the last few months, guarding an opium field in Afghanistan. That's one purpose. And the other purpose has to do with molding the public mind here in the United States. The war on terror, in that sense, is a war on public perception here. It is intended to create this sense of all-encompassing peril, which is the same kind of message that we get from time to time, that is punctuated by these phony terrorist plots, such as the one involving this 21-year-old Bangladeshi. I want to underscore once again the transparent phoniness of this in terms of the motivation and the target. Let's think of it this way. You're a 21-year-old Muslim fellow from Bangladesh. What would likely be the type of grievances that could motivate you to carrying out a terrorist attack in the United States? If you came here as an asset of Al-Qaeda, seeking to wreak vengeance on the United States, what would be your primary target of opportunity? Would you go after the New York Federal Reserve Bank? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It makes a whole lot of sense in terms of, if you will, brand identification or the promotion of a message here for public consumption in the United States. As handlers, in other words, in writing the script, we're intending to send a message to us. And so what you see when you take a look at the other plots that have been arranged by the FBI, by the terrorism facilitators, once again, that's the federal government's expression to describe the people who are involved in putting together these so-called sting operations. They almost, without exception, have something to do with motives that are rooted in resentment over drone strikes and other forms of aggression by the United States against civilian populations of the Muslim world. They have to do with resentments over the policies regarding the Palestinians, the Israeli-Palestinian dispute. A lot of these people were motivated by the murderous embargo of Iraq, which killed hundreds of thousands of people over the course of a decade. Others have been motivated by resentment over the invasion and occupation of Iraq, which has been a horrible thing for Iraqis of all descriptions. It's been catastrophic for Iraqi Christians. A lot of people who have been lured into these plots are understandably resentful over drone strikes that have wiped out weddings, funerals, and homes in Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia and elsewhere. But it strikes me as preposterous that a 21-year-old Bangladeshi Muslim radical would choose the New York Federal Reserve Bank as the symbolic expression of what he hates about the United States government. However, that has transfer potential in terms of rebranding certain people in this country who are not Muslim extremists as people who would be looked upon as enemies of the state and a potential threat to the public safety. And that, of course, would be people who understand the evil that the Federal Reserve embodies. This is something that has become a matter of some prominence and some discussion here, owing in large measure to the Ron Paul campaign, almost single-handedly as a public figure, albeit one who has been propelled by a large public wave of understanding and education. Ron Paul has made the Federal Reserve a subject of controversy, and he has been exposing the corruption that the Federal Reserve has been engaged in for almost a century. Next year, of course, the centennial of the advent of the Federal Reserve. And so this could be looked upon as sort of a grace note for what's likely to be a major theme during the centennial commemoration of this horrible thing that is the Federal Reserve, namely that there are irrational forces within the United States. Some of them, of course, might liaise with our foreign enemies, the Muslim extremists, who reject the Federal Reserve, which, of course, is to be looked upon as the savior of the economy and the custodian of our wealth and the only hope for the restoration of our prosperity, when, of course, it's exactly the opposite of all those things. I mean, the Federal Reserve is the chief source of our economic sickness. It's what sets in business, it sets in motion the business cycle, the booms and busts. And, of course, we're dealing now with the deepening and increasing and ever more ominous economic bust, notwithstanding the propaganda with which we're being barraged about a supposed recovery. 2013 is going to be a perfectly horrible year. Mr. Bernanke, the commissar in charge of the Federal Reserve System, has announced what literally would be a QE infinity, quantitative easing, the third round of quantitative easing, QE3, is Zimbabwean in its potential. Of course, Zimbabwe has been this bizarre science experiment to see what would be the social effect of literally infinite money printing. They've allowed hyperinflation to ravage that country now without Xerxes for a number of years. They're undergoing quantitative easing of the same kind that the Federal Reserve in principle has announced its intention to carry out. And just a few days before this phony plot, this, if you will, terrorism out of a can plot in New York City, Mr. Bernanke, last Sunday, as a matter of fact, was in Tokyo at a meeting of the International Monetary Fund, where he was defending QE infinity in the teeth of some skepticism expressed by some of the representatives of the Tokyo Central Bank and some other people who are very high in the international banking hierarchy, or perhaps I should use C.S. Lewis's expression from the Screwtape Letters here, and refer to them as the lowerarchy, because that, of course, would be a suitable sense of their origin. I mean, they would emerge from the depths. They would descend from the heavens. But you have, I think, something of a complementary set of events here. Bernanke among the elites in Tokyo defending potentially infinite inflation generation by the Federal Reserve, while at the same time you have the FBI setting in motion this high-profile pseudo-terrorist plot targeting the Federal Reserve Bank in the most conspicuous city in the world. And I think that the intended effect here is, on the margin, to embed in the mass public mind this idea that people who speak ill of the Federal Reserve are in some sense, some distant conceptual sense, kindred to the kind of people who would be blowing things up in the name of Allah. In other words, that enemies of the Federal Reserve are to be looked upon as potential terrorists. And this is of a piece with what the Homeland Security Department has been saying since at least 2009. Actually, the report, the notorious intelligence report about so-called domestic extremists, was gestating in the Department of Homeland Security in the last year of the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration. But this idea that so-called lone wolf terrorism among what are described as Tea Party activists or disgruntled veterans or critics of the Federal Reserve or other right-wing extremists, that is the emerging threat that the Homeland Security Department needs to focus on. And by way of illustrating how this has tangible impact, we talked a little bit just at the beginning of this program about Wade Hicks, who's a resident of Mississippi, who was headed for Tokyo to a naval base to attend a family reunion. The plane landed in Oahu for refueling, and he was taken off the plane and told that he was on the no-fly list. He made himself conspicuous as a practitioner of emergency preparedness and as a critic of the NDAA. And here he found himself detained, perhaps indefinitely, because he had been targeted as a domestic enemy of the regime. So he was on the no-fly list, and now he's essentially stuck without any way of remedying his detention because of the fact that he was put on that list for his political views.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, basically they're using the threat of terrorism to take away our freedom, and there's a non-existent threat. William Gregg is telling us about a sheriff's raid on a gentleman in Idaho against a man named Bear, certainly a person who is not a terrorist in any way, but the sheriff's office has staged a gun-drawn raid upon him. You pick up the story and tell our listeners.
Yeah, Bear, or Michael Gibbons, Bear, I'll call him for the sake of convenience, is somebody who had a talk show of his own for a little while, speaking about the same subjects we discussed in terms that were similar, not identical by any means. There are some disagreements that we might have on matters of detail, but he certainly knows the identity of a lot of the groups and individuals who are undermining America's national independence, and destroying the soundness of our money. He'd spoken out about some of the things that are happening with respect to big pharma and big agriculture, the adulteration of the food supply. He's an organic farmer, so that's not a matter of some concern to him. He and Marcela Cruz have lived in Idaho for a couple of years. They had lived previously in California. They lived in New Mexico for a while. He'd been a police officer briefly in the 1980s. He was actually injured, critically injured in a stabbing about 30 years ago while he was trying to arrest a shoplifter. So he was actually putting his life on the line to defend private property as a peace officer. But on August 16th, a neighbor with whom they'd had some kind of a low-key dispute phoned in a bogus report of domestic violence, saying that she had overheard an argument at their house there in this little neighborhood called Lisa. And she said that she thought that he might be hitting his wife. What happened is that there had been some crosswords exchanged, nothing terribly serious. There had been basically one brief exchange in which Bear had said, you know, I'm not feeling well this morning. I don't really have time for any negativity. Could we just move on? There have been some complaints about problems with their livestock. They have chickens and llamas and goats and a number of other things there on their farm. So their neighbor overheard this cross-exchange of words and called the police and said that we think that there's domestic violence occurring at this address. That call was relayed to one county dispatcher who got in touch with the second county dispatcher. Both county dispatchers made a point of saying that there was no evidence that weapons were involved in this domestic dispute. I have the 911 call and the radio exchange of the deputies en route to the home. And one of the deputies is saying, well, we have to assume that there are weapons there. We know him. We've had dealings with him before. He's anti-law enforcement. He's a constitutionalist. I actually have a link on this page in my essay entitled "He's a Constitutionalist" to that radio exchange in which a deputy identified as Officer 57 says he's a constitutionalist. Because he had been identified as a constitutionalist, this was no longer a mere safety check, a welfare check on what was happening at this address. Suddenly this became a full force raid. These people arrived in force, five or six deputies and the sheriff himself. They were wearing tactical vests. They approached the home with guns drawn. One of them was carrying an AR-15 with the selector set to fire and his finger on the trigger. He was the one whose body camera recorded the video, which I have embedded at my blog in this essay, He's a Constitutionalist. When one of the deputies, his name is Detective Rich Paris, approached the home, Marcella opened the door and said, "What are you doing here?" He instructed her to come out of the house, and she withdrew into the house because she was afraid of a stranger with guns wearing body armor. He reached into the house and dragged her through the kitchen door, scraping the left side of her body against the door jamb as he did so, leaving her entire left side disfigured with deep and serious bruises. Bear came out and asked what was going on. He was ordered to his knees with his back to the man holding an assault rifle, who put the muzzle of his gun up against Bear's skull while he was handcuffed. He was in the coup de grace position. Anybody who's seen photographs or footage of what happened to places like Babi Yar or in the killing fields of communist China would recognize the position that Bear was ordered to assume. He was kneeling on the ground with his back to somebody who had the muzzle of an automatic weapon, or not an assault rifle, pressed against his skull while he was being handcuffed. They didn't explain what was happening. Bear demanded to know what was happening, and he was told to shut up while they conducted an illegal search of his home, supposedly on the pretext of clearing the house to see if there's anybody else in the house. They had no legal right. They had no warrant. They had no cause or justification to do what they did. They were trolling for evidence they could use to justify this raid because he'd been identified as a constitutionalist. And this reflects the fact that they were able to confirm this fact that the sheriff's office has been receiving indoctrination from Morrissey's and the Southern Poverty Law Center, identifying constitutionalists as enemies of the government and as people who should be looked upon as potential terrorists. And this is something that happened once again in August in Letha, Idaho, of all the unlikely places.
So what was the outcome of this?
Well, there's going to be a lawsuit, and there was a misdemeanor charge that was filed against Bear that had nothing to do with domestic violence. On the other side of the break, I'll go into more details as well.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest, of course, is William Craig. Ladies and gentlemen, the fact that some of our police officers are being taught that the Constitution is bad is very worrisome. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess it's William Craig, and he's telling us about this incident where, of course, a team of heavily armed police officers accosted this man in his home, supposedly because, of course, there'd been some question of domestic violence, but, of course, there hadn't been any domestic violence. The only person who was bruised was the fellow's wife, and that was because the police officer grabbed her and suddenly bruised the rest side of her body as they dragged her out of the house. And now, of course, they have the gentleman who's a former police officer himself, kneeling on the ground with his handcuffed behind him. And, of course, really, we have these statements made by these police officers that the reason that they're so concerned about this gentleman is because he's a constitutionalist. He believes in the Constitution. Go right ahead, William.
This individual, Michael Gibbons, more commonly known as Bear, was handcuffed behind his back, once again with the muzzle of this assault rifle pointed at his skull, and he was told to get up, which he couldn't do. And I need to tell you a couple of things about Mr. Gibbons. I've spent some time in their home. I've been with him and his wife on a number of occasions trying to track down the story. This is something I started investigating about a month and a half ago, and I made every effort to contact the sheriff and the deputies and gave them every opportunity once I'd acquired the official reports and the video and the audio to get response to my questions. They didn't deign to respond, and having finally gotten to the point where it was clear that I'd exhausted every avenue of getting their quote-unquote side of the story, I published the story about a week ago, and that included the video that was taken by the body camera of the assailant who was carrying the assault rifle. And Mr. Gibbons is about 5'7" or 5'8". I'm guessing that he probably weighs about 160 pounds. He's a man of about 52 or 53 years, and some of them have been very hard years. I mentioned that back in 1982, he was stabbed while he was working as a police officer, trying to arrest a shoplifter. And after the wounds healed on the outside, he was left with internal injuries that began to fester. And he ended up undergoing a procedure that left him with an infection that began to eat away the flesh of his abdomen. And if you have a chance to talk to him in person, he might show you by lifting up his shirt that he doesn't have a belly button. And I saw that and said, well, that would be something you have in common with Adam, the only two men I'm aware of who don't have belly buttons. In this case, he doesn't have a belly button because the entire surface of his stomach had been eaten away by a flesh-eating bacteria in the late 1980s. And he was told by his attending physician that he had no chance of recuperating because of the fact that the infection had gotten so deep and so widespread that he didn't have any antibiotics that would avail much. So he was told that the doctor could make him comfortable, but he was going to die within a couple of months. Through a chance encounter, he met somebody who introduced him to colloidal silver. And by both internal consumption of colloidal silver, he says, this is something I find dubious. I don't want to take heavy metals into my body. But by topical application of it, he says, he was able to reverse the progress of the disease and cure himself. Point is, he's got some injuries that are long-lasting. And so he's got chronic pain of a couple of varieties, plus, no doubt, some element of enduring trauma from this near-fatal stabbing that he underwent. So he was on his knees with his back to somebody holding an assault rifle. He was handcuffed behind his back owing to problems with his joints, the pinched nerve which had been afflicting him that morning. That's why he was cranky when he talked with his wife and why he snapped at her. He was told to stand up. He couldn't stand up, so he was dragged to his feet and then dropped on his tailbone. And as a result of being dropped on his tailbone, he suffered serious injury to at least two of his vertebrae. In the times that I've seen him, he's hobbling on a cane. He can no longer walk. He can't take care of the farm. He is an invalid, and his physician, I've seen some of the medical reports that he's received from the doctor. His physician has said that it's not going to get any better. So he's been left with irreversible injury, life-altering injury, as a result of this supposed domestic violence call by the Gem County Sheriff's Office. His wife, Marcella, had undergone no trauma whatsoever until her supposed protectors showed up. Their official report lists that she is not a victim of domestic violence, but there was no evidence that she had suffered domestic violence of any kind. She was not listed as a victim. She was listed as other in the police report. She was, of course, a victim of violence because within 2 days, as I pointed out, the entire left side of her body was mottled with bruises. If those bruises had been inflicted on her by Bear, Bear would be in jail right now facing felony charges for aggravated assault and domestic violence. But because they were inflicted on her by Deputy Rich Paris, Deputy Detective Rich Paris, who, by the way, has an assault conviction in his record. This is somebody who has a previous assault conviction. Because those injuries were inflicted upon her by him when he dragged her unwillingly out of her home, apparently the assailant is not going to face charges. So she was victimized, Bear was victimized, and this was on the basis of what I consider to be a malicious phone call made by a neighbor who didn't like them for some reason. There was a dispute in the neighborhood having to do with the use of irrigation water. They belonged to an irrigation co-op. The water master of that co-op explained to me that Bear and Marcella had done nothing wrong, but but their personality apparently abraded another personality in that group who had an influence on the neighbor who called the police that morning, called the sheriff's office that morning. So as they're sitting there digesting the trauma of having their home invaded by armed strangers in body armor, the sheriff leads a party into the home to conduct an illegal search on the pretext of clearing the house for the purpose of officer safety. But if you take a look at the video, anybody with even a rudimentary understanding of how you deal with security issues of that kind, and I would say that my understanding is still better than rudimentary, will be struck by the fact that they make no effort to clear the corners. That's the first thing you're taught. Clear the corners, look to make sure that there's nobody in any of the available hiding spots. They don't look under the stairway. There's a large space under the stairway that could have been a concealing spot, could have been a place of concealment for somebody with a weapon. But they made a point of going through personal belongings that were not in plain view. On a couple of occasions, the person carrying the camera, the guy who was armed with the assault rifle, picked up an ashtray and sniffed it looking for evidence of marijuana use. They didn't find any marijuana. They professed to smell marijuana. There was no marijuana used that morning. Bear made the mistake of admitting that he has from time to time used marijuana. He self-medicates like a number of other people do. I think it's unwise. It shouldn't be considered a crime. A vice, certainly. A crime, no. But he was eventually given a misdemeanor citation for possession of paraphernalia, which in this case consisted of an old coffee can that was not in plain sight. When they got to the upstairs space in this two-story white farmhouse in Letha, they found what they thought was a grow room. There was a nursery for growing plants in one of the rooms that had lights and all of the attachments and devices that you would associate with the aquaponics. They got downstairs. Actually, on the video, you can hear one of the deputies saying, "We'll need to get a warrant for this." Well, no, they needed to get a warrant before they went into the home. They didn't have exigent circumstances. They didn't have a plausible threat to officer safety because both of the occupants of the house were out of the house when they went in. They needed a warrant before they went in because they didn't have a warrant at the home invasion. But they got downstairs. The first thing they said to Bear is, "Well, we found your grow room." And Bear looked at them in disgust and said, "No, you found my tomatoes." He's an organic farmer once again. He grows organic tomatoes. He's involved in aquaponics. And aquaponics, of course, means that you grow things indoors, starters, before you plant them outdoors. He'd actually made a presentation to the city council in Emmett, which is a town of about 5 or 6,000 people, 10 or 12 miles away from Letha. He'd made a presentation to the city council on aquaponics because he thought that it would be a good idea to promote the use of locally grown organic food and something that could provide not only a source of healthy food for the nearby community, but it's something that could be used to create jobs in the agricultural sector. And of course, this is an agricultural region to begin with. So they didn't have evidence that he was growing marijuana, much to their disappointment, because the only reason I think why they would do what they did was they wanted to find evidence that he was growing and selling marijuana as a pretext to seize the house through asset forfeiture. So they had to settle for assaulting Marcella and then assaulting Bear and then writing him a misdemeanor citation for possession of paraphernalia. That's the only misdemeanor, non-traffic related misdemeanor that you find in Bear's record. The Idaho Repository, which lists the criminal history of everybody in the state, is open for public inspection, which I think is a pretty bad idea, lists a number of traffic infractions and a number of citations. All were dismissed except for one that had to do with the issue of registration of his vehicle. And that's the result of a paperwork mix-up that Bear explained to me at some length and was able to document. The only other infraction in his record is the citation he was issued for possession of paraphernalia that was the fruit of the poison tree. They extracted consent from the search after they had terrorized him and handcuffed him and conducted an illegal search of the home. So once again, in legal terms, this is what they call the fruit of the poison tree. But the reason why they took the posture they did was because he had been identified as a constitutionalist. And speaking with a very prominent resident of Letha, who's an eminently respectable person from a wealthy and influential family, she's connected politically, she's somebody who's probably an exemplar of what you would expect from a small town in western Idaho, who was abused by a deputy in a traffic encounter 5 years ago. He accused her of assaulting an officer because she had been stopped for a traffic citation and pulled away. The wheels of her vehicle kicked up dust, and he said that this was a deliberate attempt to batter and retaliate against him for writing a ticket. So So in 105 degree heat, he handcuffed her and held her in the back of his cruiser for about an hour and let several hundred pounds of meat spoil in her van, and terrified her 12-year-old daughter while she was being held here waiting for the record to come out and impound the vehicle. It was an act of petty retaliation that eventually cost Gibb County several tens of thousands of dollars in settlement to the lawsuit that was filed. But she knows the sheriff. She's had him at her home for political fundraisers and for campaign events. She's been to the sheriff's office. She has developed a great deal of knowledge as to the operations of the sheriff's office. And what she told me is that the Gem County Sheriff's Office has been receiving instruction from Morrissey's and the SPLC about the dangers of right-wing extremism, including, of course, this ubiquitous menace, so-called constitutionalist. So when that word was used in the radio exchange pursuant to the 9/11 call to describe Bear and his wife as a threat to officer safety, what we see here is the full flower of the malevolent influence of Morrissey's and his group and kindred watchdog groups.
Now, is there going to be a lawsuit against the... Basically, of course, they obviously got into trouble with this woman who you'd interviewed. And that must have cost them a fair amount of money. And basically, is there any way to get rid of this sheriff? I would think that...
Well, he's up for election in a few weeks. And the problem here is that the alternative isn't any better than, as far as I can tell, the alternative is a fellow who's a retread Democrat running as an independent, who's the former chief of police in Emmett. And the doctor who treated Bear for his, giving him pain remedies that are actually much worse than marijuana. Well, these pharmaceuticals will kill you. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that I think marijuana use is a good thing. I don't. But a lot of the things that the pharmaceutical industry advertises on television are several orders of magnitude worse than marijuana. And the stuff that Bear is on now is worse than marijuana. But what the doctor told him was that it is very common for people to show up at trauma care after their encounter with the Gem County Sheriff's Office or with the Emmett Police Department. This doctor, once again, is a conservative, church-going Republican guy. And he said to Bear and Marcella, you're lucky to be alive, quite frankly, as a result of what happened here. So there is a rather poor reputation here for both the sheriff's office and the police department, and the alternative to Sheriff Chuck Rowland here is a fellow who's the former chief of police of the Emmett Police Department. There will be a lawsuit, and there, of course, is going to be an effort over the next couple of weeks to see what can be done to remove Chuck Rowland at the election this coming November. It's obvious that if you've got somebody who's taking the point during an illegal search of a home that is an act of state terrorism, he's doing exactly the opposite of what a constitutional sheriff should do. If Richard Mack had been the sheriff in Gem County, this wouldn't have been permitted to happen. He would have interposed himself. He would have conducted a welfare check, probably. He would have shown up with the deputy, knocked on the door, and said, we had to report that there was trouble here. Is everybody okay? And having confirmed that there was no domestic violence underway, he would have said, well, very good. I'm glad to see everything's all right. Have a nice day, and please let us know if you have any trouble.
William, we're just about out of time. I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your articles there, and certainly how they can get to your PayPal button. How can people certainly access your information?
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. Once again, the name of the blog is Pro Libertate, ProLibertate. And it can be found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or go to Google and type in my name, William Grigg. Pro Libertate should be the first return or the first one of several. At the bottom of every essay, there is a PayPal button for those who have access to PayPal and are interested in contributing to help me keep Pro Libertate online and to help keep my family afloat. I'd really appreciate the help that we could receive. Any help would be very much, very useful and very much appreciated. And I am very grateful and will be eternally grateful to you, Dr. Stan, and to your audience. So many people have been so astoundingly generous in donating to me by way of Pro Libertate and in making other gifts that have kept our family comfortably on the side of subsistence. But just really, I do appreciate the help. Pro Libertate, the blog, once again, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And the essay we're discussing this evening is entitled, He's a Constitutionalist, and that was the, I believe, October 9th edition of Pro Libertate. There's another essay that I published last night that has to do with, an October 9th issue, he's a constitutionalist. The essay I published last night has to do with the depredations that are being carried out in Idaho by Wendy J. Olson, who's the federal attorney for Idaho. Just very quickly on that subject, her office announced about a week and a half ago that they have taken in $84 million over the last year in fines and assessments and in civil asset forfeiture, which is 10 times the operating budget of the U.S. Attorney's Office for Idaho. $84 million. There's not $84 million worth of federal crime taking place in the state of Idaho. Of course, in the constitutional sense, there's little, if any, federal crime going on in the state of Idaho because there are only three offenses listed in the Constitution that can be properly within the criminal jurisdiction of the federal government. There's no federal crime taking place here. But it is a racket. It is an immensely profitable, lucrative racket. And that's happening here in the Gem State, in the gateway to the great American Northwest, the reddest of all red states, which, of course, is just overteeming with people who would be considered constitutionalists. This is perhaps the only state in the Union where constitutionalists should be a plaudit rather than a pejorative. And yet you have a local sheriff's office conducting a paramilitary raid on a couple of helpless organic farmers because one of them is identified as a constitutionalist.
I would think that they would never would have left that tape out. How did you ever get the tape, or should I ask? Or we won't ask then. But I think it's important, ladies and gentlemen, that the Constitution is the foundation of our freedom, and there are people, even within law enforcement, who hate the Constitution. There are people at the highest levels of our government in Washington, D.C., who hate our Constitution. If we want to maintain our freedom, we must certainly return to the Constitution and limit the power of government. We'll be right back. Dr. Stan, and we do hope you enjoyed the conversation with William Grigg, certainly one of my favorite guests. And basically, we have a real problem in America because people have forgotten what America is about. They've forgotten that you can never trust government. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. Any government that can provide whatever the people need must be able to take whatever the people have, and a government that can provide for you from the cradle to the grave has to be able to control you from the cradle to the grave. We have a wonderful socialist society in America. The only trouble is we can't pay for it. Our real, of course, debt is about $81 trillion. We currently have 56 million people on Social Security and Medicare. And this last year, we ran a $1.1 trillion deficit. Within the next 19 years, we have 79 million more people who have retired and become eligible for Social Security and Medicare. And there's no money to pay for it. Nobody wants to tell you that. The whole financial system is coming down. The true debt is about $81 trillion if you take into account certainly what we are pledged to provide for the elderly. So if you are out there in the audience and you actually are dependent on Social Security and Medicare, start making plans, because the system is going to collapse. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to see who is really running our government. Brotherhood of Darkness certainly is thousands and thousands of copies out, well over 50,000 across America. We have no idea how many copies, but you need to get Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talk on the dark secret, on the forbidden secret, and my most recent talk, Agenda 21, the covert plan. Now, what is Agenda 21? Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century. That is a term that's put forward by the people who advocate this program. And, of course, the plan is being implemented today. What is its goal? To ship our jobs and our manufacturing overseas, to deindustrialize America, to tear down our dams so we won't have hydroelectric electricity, to close down our nuclear power plants. We haven't built one in over 30 years, so we won't have nuclear power. And then, of course, to stop generating electricity by burning fossil fuels because they produce global warming. What they really want to do is deindustrialize America and impoverish our nation. We have the documentation, their documentation, and the syllabus that goes with the Agenda 21 program. So, and it goes with the Agenda 21 DVD. All of these are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That's the book, Brotherhood of Darkness. The talk on the dark secret. The talk on the forbidden secret. The talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. And certainly we hope that you'll get these at 1-800-544-8927. Anything we produce, you have our permission to copy and to get out. Now, of course, I have to remind you, my ministry, Radio Liberty, is heard on dozens of stations all across America, but it's an expensive proposition. We do a weekend program as well. But quite frankly, we do need your help to maintain the networks that we have at the present time. So if you are in a position to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And certainly go to our website at radioliberty.com, where you can watch our DVDs for nothing. You can listen to our radio programs live 4 hours a day there. Our other radio program is not archived there, but you can listen to our archive programs 24 hours a day. You can read our newsletters, and of course, William Grigg is certainly currently writing our newsletters. We have other things up there, like the population control agenda, certainly like my section on other DVDs or videos on the web. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. So until Monday, may the Lord be with you. Grateful for a life.
Rebel Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is the 19th of October. It's Friday, 2012. You're in the right place. We're going to have a good time today. 3 hours of interesting information coming from not only Josh here, but the listeners. Yes. Yay. We're going to have Profound Friday today. We're going to talk about profound experiences. What was one of your most? It's hard to say what was the most. I know.
Right.
So what was one of your most profound experiences? So we want you to be thinking on that. And it does take a lot of thought. I went to bed last night thinking about it, woke up thinking about it. Because if you were to take your life and synthesize it down to, you know, one test tube of information and the things that impacted you the most, it's really kind of hard.
It, absolutely. Because I don't look at my life as a singular event, mm-hmm. you know, but a string of significant events, really.
Yes. So. And so they all string together.